Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. This week's online video picks are up on our website. Each week we select five web videos, and I anchor them in a picks video on our site. This week's picks include Barack Obama roasting Rahm Emanuel at a dinner in 2005, and one from The Onion that you've got to see if you became election-obsessed during the campaign. The Onion has a depiction of people maybe like you who are having trouble getting a life after the election. See our online video picks at WNYC.org/video. Well, Democratic lawmakers today are formally proposing a $25 billion bailout bill. It's loan guarantees, really, for the big three automakers as Congress begins its lame duck session. The debate about whether to bail them out or let them go bankrupt will come to a head in Congress, and to explain what's at stake and the options on the table, because General Motors, for one, may not even have until President Obama takes office. Rebecca Lindland is with us, director of the Auto Group at Global Insight, an economic research and consulting firm, to talk about some of the options and some of the pros and cons. Here is a clip of Senator Carl Levin, Democrat from Michigan, we should point out, on Meet the Press yesterday, making the case for.
Well, this is a national problem, first of all. Without any question, we've got at least 3 million jobs dependent upon this industry surviving. We've got, this is a Main Street problem. We've got 10,000 or more dealers. They cover the country and every town of this country. The auto industry touches millions and millions of lives. One out of 10 jobs in this country are auto-related. 20% of our retail sales are auto-related or automobiles. So this is a national problem.
So, Rebecca Lindland, first of all, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
And Carl Levin points out that one of 10 jobs are auto-related. Mm-hmm. Everyone basically agrees this is a national problem. We played a clip earlier of Mark Shields, the commentator from the PBS NewsHour, who said if the auto industry goes under, the country enters a depression from a recession.
Right.
Is this hyperbole?
No, you know, it's really not. And I thought that your comment prior to the break about this being, you know, it's a nonpartisan problem, because it really is. You know, normally, personally, I'm not in favor of intervention. I'm very much of a capitalist. And yet at the same time, you have to have a realistic view of what could happen here. And one of the things that really could happen is the tremendous domino effect of millions of jobs being lost because of the impact of the automotive industry not participating in our economy.
Millions of jobs ultimately down the line. And when I said it doesn't break down along ideological lines, it does seem to be breaking down to some degree along partisan lines in Congress, and we'll talk about that. But I was surprised to hear, for example, the liberal economist Joseph Stiglitz, the Pulitzer Prize winner at Columbia University, arguing against a bailout on TV the other night, saying, look, Detroit can go into Chapter 11, you know, the companies can go into Chapter 11 like other companies and restructure that way. And then you get other liberal economists arguing that you must bail them out, people who support the unions or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then there was Thomas Friedman, and we're going to play this clip right now, who, you know, probably is kind of centrist, but kind of leans a little bit more toward the liberal side, and listen to what he said about bailing out Detroit yesterday on Meet the Press.
What was Detroit's plan 2 years ago when they confronted this problem? It was to subsidize gasoline at $1.99 a gallon if you bought a Hummer or a Suburban or a big truck. That was their idea of innovation. So, you know, it was like a crack dealer offering subsidized crack rather than, you know, going to a clinic to get off the drug. And who was the enabler of that? The enabler of that were the Carl Levins, all the Michigan delegation, who didn't go to these people, the outrage of these people. Now, we have to save these jobs. Where was their outrage 2 years ago, okay, about getting them to be more innovative, to getting them on top of the energy efficiency question? They have been enabling the destruction of this industry. So show me a plan. Show me a plan that says, if we give you this $25 billion, you're actually going to change. Absent that, remember, Tom, we're going to charge this $25 billion on our kids' Visa cards. This goes on our kids' Visa cards, and we have a moral obligation to make sure this is spent wisely.
Thomas Friedman on Meet the Press yesterday. Rebecca Lindland, since you follow the auto industry, maybe you can fact check a little piece of that for me, first of all. Part where he said that they came up with a plan to subsidize gasoline at $1.99?
I don't recall that campaign. I mean, in fact, what I do recall is GM developing the Chevy hybrid, the Tahoe hybrid, and the Malibu hybrid. And Chrysler now recently ran a plan for $2.99 subsidizing gasoline if you bought it, but that was in the summertime when gas was very high. I think that this is one of the problems that people are having with this, is that for the most part, many of the people that are in the media, many of the economists have and always have had a very, very negative view of the Detroit Big Three. You know, in their 20s, they may have bought a really bad domestic vehicle that their parents encouraged them to buy. It failed them because in the 80s, GM, Ford, and Chrysler were making really bad vehicles. But that was 30 years ago, and people really need to understand what GM, Ford, and Chrysler have been doing recently. And just a couple of years ago...
Well, they've been making... You could argue they've been making bad for America vehicles.
But Americans have been buying them. I mean, they haven't been forcing these vehicles on Americans. Americans have been choosing to buy SUVs, and they've been, in fact, buying large Toyotas in record numbers as well.
So, but as recently as 10 years ago, the Big Three had about 70% of U.S. auto sales, from what I've read. Now they have only 47%.
Well, and part of that is in an effort to restructure their business, to start making money, to learn how to run profitably at a smaller level. So some of what they've done has been strategic in nature, in terms of saying we don't need 30% market share if we can't get a profit on it. Let's learn how to run at 22 or 23% market share profitably. So they've been deliberately cutting back on incentives and cutting back on some of their market share in order to learn how to operate profitably.
Lewis in Asbury Park. You're on WNYC. Hi, Lewis.
Good morning, folks. Hi, Brian. Listen, I wanted to emphasize that there were a number of benefits that have been given to the auto industry over the years. Particularly, there was a huge tax break given for large SUVs like Hummers, which was totally outrageous at the time. Michigan politicians backed all the way.
What was the tax break?
It was a loophole that says that if your vehicle weighs over 5,000 pounds, you get a tax break. But very few vehicles actually do that, actually weigh over that amount, certainly not Suburbans. And the Hummer H1 military vehicle is the one. You also had to have a certain amount of income attached to that on a personal basis in order to take advantage of the loophole.
It's
not really something
thing
that is going to spread across America and encourage people to buy Hummers.
Lewis?
I think it was more about the philosophical, the idea of not taking steps preventative to stem this and change the climate. They
did that in 1975 when they put CAFE standards on the corporate average fuel economy, and they said that, you know, trucks have to get a certain miles per gallon, cars have to get a different one. Americans said, well, I still want a V8 engine and I still want power, so what do you have? Well, guess what? We had trucks, and that's why we've seen the resurgence of trucks into the general population, is that everyone said, I need more power in my vehicles. I don't want a four-cylinder engine. What do you have for me? That's why we see Toyota get into the big truck market as well.
Need and want are two different things, but government policy has enabled this overconsumption, hasn't it?
Well, you're missing the point of saying of the public being able to negotiate around what the government deems quote-unquote best for us. At the time, the government wanted us to buy more fuel-efficient vehicles, and American consumers, free to choose, said, I don't want that. I want large vehicles, and that's why they've been buying them in record numbers. That's why we saw trucks shoot up in terms of market share, being more than 60% of all vehicles sold right up until recently, and they're still 50%. It's Americans choosing what they want. And we tend to choose bigger vehicles.
Now, the United Auto Workers president Ron Gettelfinger, argues that a bankruptcy in any of the big three would mean the downfall of all three.
Mm-hmm.
Some blame the union contracts for bogging down the auto companies, and they argue that in order to save them, the UAW would have to make concessions, again,
mm-hmm.
scrambling left and right. Even the former Labor Secretary, Robert Reich, had on his website the other day, I heard a statement that with any kind of bailout, the labor negotiations, the unions will have to take lower pay and lower benefits. So do you expect the UAW, which says it won't, to actually accept major sacrifices in exchange for a bailout?
I think that Ron Gettelfinger is a very smart businessman. He's realistic. It's one of the reasons why we've seen the unions take the concessions in their 2007 agreements. And realistically, they will have to take more. Of course, he's going to say we won't initially, but I think that in the end, we're going to have to see the unions take negotiations. There's no denying that they have very sweet packages. They have pensions. They have some of the best benefits known to man outside of Congress, probably. So they need to take these, and it's going to be part of the plan. That's a realistic view, I think. But Gettelfinger's just protecting his own.
Jeff in West Milford, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, how are you doing today? Listening to her comment as far as blaming some of these woes as on somebody that bought a bad car in the mid 70s, or parents made him buy a bad car. You know, it sounds like the same thing that they said years ago as far as the environmental problem. We'll just build more trees, or we'll it's blamed on something else. I think it's a problem that's been eating on itself for years and years and years. The American people, along with the car companies, haven't been fessing themselves up to it. It's one of these things where it's like, oil is a finite substance. There's just so much of it, and it's wreaking havoc on our environment and our economy. And, we just can't be driving around in SUVs for, the next 20, 30, 50 years.
But, Jeff, what about Rebecca's point that American consumers have shown over and over again that they want the larger cars and the more power, and so they were, taking advantage of whatever opportunity to buy them?
Well, it's an addiction. It's like anything else. It's one of these things where if you offer it to them, and they're going to bite at it, just as long as the price is, the price of oil to the price of gas was cheap and everything like that. Now consumers are going to have to say, I need to do something different. And the car companies have been slow to, they saw this years ago.
Jeff, what about the bailout? Are you for it or against it?
I'm middle of the road when it comes to that. It's one of these things I really feel bad for the, it's a bloated industry, and if the industry does, I think the industry needs to be made, if they're going to be given this money, they need to be working on the innovations like a lot of the Japanese car companies are doing.
Jeff, thank you very much. And be careful. Don't drive in the middle of the road, okay? You'll get creamed by somebody going the other way. All right, Jeff. So, Rebecca, mm-hmm. what are the differences between the union contracts of the big three and the non-union contracts of the other automakers operating in this country, like Toyota? I've heard that the pay is actually roughly the same. What's really different is the work rules. How true is that?
Well, it's a combination of things. It's more along the legacy costs the legacy costs and just the sheer volume. The big three have been employing people in the U.S. for over 100 years, whereas Toyota, Honda, Nissan have only come here in the last few decades. I mean, Toyota's been here for about 40 years. So I think that it's just the age of the workforce and the volume of workforce. There are a lot more people to support. There's also a lot more people that are on pensions and that were able to retire at 55. They had an incredibly sweet deal, Brian. I mean, I'm, again, not a proponent of unions. What I am a proponent of, however, is protecting the American economy in terms of jobs and understanding that we're looking at a ripple effect of if we loan the big three money, because it's not giving it to them, it's loaning it with the understanding that they will pay it back. It's not a panacea. It's not going to fix everything. What it will prevent, though, is the bloodbath of jobs being lost all the way down to the dealership level, all the way down. People don't think about this, but the amount of money that local dealerships put into your local economy in terms of commercials, media, supporting the newspapers, supporting Little League. It's ridiculous to think about, but it's absolutely true. And so when we look at the costs that are associated with the OEMs, the manufacturers, we have to also understand the ripple effect down through the economy.
So after the automakers, then if the recession threatens other major employers, should we go there too? Bail out Walmart and Target and, you know, I don't know, whatever industry.
But that's why you have to look and study and use a discerning eye in terms of what's going to have the worst impact. What is going to have the worst impact? We have to also fix consumers. We have to help them. We have to stop foreclosures. And not bailing out the auto industry is going to have a tremendously negative impact on the economy and is going to have people lose jobs. You're going to have the jobs lost at the manufacturers. You're going to have them lost at the suppliers. You're going to have them lost at ad agencies, media outlets, down to the dealership.
Right. And if the bailout doesn't happen and the big three were actually to go bankrupt, mm-hmm. There's an argument in New York Times, in the New York Times today, in an article by Louis Uchitel, that the foreign-owned automakers could pick up the slack in terms of U.S. jobs.
How likely
is that?
Not right away, by any means, because GM and Toyota have a joint ventures. GM and Suzuki have joint ventures. There's a lot of suppliers that would be severely disrupted, and they supply other manufacturers as well. They supply the foreign manufacturers that produce vehicles here. So the disruption would be at a minimum of 1 year, at a minimum. And if people think that you can just turn the switch on and be able to re-employ these people, that's just not realistic. And the other thing is that these are union workers who wouldn't necessarily be able to just step into a non-union plant. That's where the union comes into play also. So they can't just turn around, relocate their family, and go to work at a Hyundai plant or something.
Right.
It's not going to happen like that.
We're just about out of time. This is an incredibly complex topic.
Mm-hmm.
There is the potential effect reaching into many, many communities because the dealerships are so much a part of the American payroll. We're going to speak to a dealer later in the week. Rebecca Lindland, director of the Auto Group, Global Insight, an economic research and consulting firm. Just tell us what you think is going to happen in Congress, because it looks like there's going to be Republican opposition in the mm-hmm. House and Senate, but that President Bush is going to go along with the Democratic majority for some kind of auto bailout with strings attached, strings that have to do with restructuring, financial restructuring, and then I would guess Obama's going to come in and then add a layer of green restructuring in addition. But what do you think we're going to see right away?
I think that's a realistic view, Brian. I think that that's about what we're going to see. I think that we will see some support from Congress on this measure, and also some kinds of strings attached, which is okay, provided they understand that in the end, it's consumers that make the choices of what these manufacturers build. It's not the manufacturer pushing their product onto the consumer. It's the consumer saying, this is what I want. This is what I want for my family. I want whatever they're going to build, whatever that is that suits their lifestyle best.
Well, we'll continue another time and have the advertising piece of the discussion that maybe should flow from that. But very interesting stuff. Thank you very much. Rebecca Lindland, director of the Auto Group at Global Insight, the economic research and consulting firm. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. For those of you who are unemployed now, some tips before you go to an employment agency. We'll talk to the New York City Consumer Affairs Commissioner, who has found some scams really afflicting an unbelievably large percentage of the employment agency business. Stay tuned.